It is Saturday, February 4th, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today's rundown, a bit of geek news, and then the Prius and hybrid technology. During the second half of the show, we'll invite your questions.
GeekSpeak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now for GeekSpeak. Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on our program, we will focus on geek news and then, more importantly, hybrid technology. Most noticeably, the Prius. We'll be talking with Keith Cummins, Toyota Prius Master Diagnostic Technician, and he's here in this studio to talk to us about hybrid technology, the whole show. During the second half, you're welcome to call in with questions and comments about hybrid technology and Prius vehicles, as things of that nature. The numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or you can contact us right now and get in the queue by going to geekspeak.org and clicking Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. This is GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, we have a full house. We have John Tracy, Technical Support Engineer for Surf Control. Miles Elam, Technical Trainer for Surf Control. Sean Cleveland, Technical Marketing Manager at NVIDIA. Drew Meyer, Product Manager at Network Appliance. We also have a guest, a Prius expert, Toyota expert, Keith Cummins, who will be speaking with us in a few minutes. But first, let's do some geek news. Geeks, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm going to start with Mr. Elam this morning. Miles?
Recording Industry Association of America, also known as the RIAA, has been suing individuals for trading music online.
When you ever hear that name, don't you want the crowd, the audience, like a melodrama, you know? Sorry, go on. They're doing what?
For the past couple of years, they've been suing individual users who have been sharing music online.
Darn right. You want to punish the customer. Go on. Yes, but sharing music online. It's been a major problem for the music industry.
Right. However, they've been doing what seems like a buckshot, like just starting suing people without sometimes any real pattern. Like, they've been suing some people that maybe like a 12-year-old or... Well, in this case, they've sued a woman named Mary Linder.
What did Mary Linder do?
Well, see, what they are accusing her of is for using an online distribution system to download, distribute, and or make available for distribution
copyrighted music. So she was sitting up there sharing computer music files on the internet, damaging the artists and the RIAA's income.
That's good in theory, except for the fact that she is a home health aide who has never bought, used, or even turned on a computer in her life.
Devious.
But was nevertheless sued.
By sharing music on the internet.
Right.
And so what was she using, like a calculator or something? I mean, so how, why are they suing her? Obviously, she's not the person doing something of this nature.
It's a buckshot. Who knows? Someone may have been the same name as someone else on a list, but
it's one of those. They make a lawsuit against a non-disclosed party, and they try to track down that party member because they don't actually know who it is. It's just an IP address, and somehow in that process, that IP address that they were trying to target became her. But she doesn't have a computer, so well, it never
sounds like a counter lawsuit.
Yeah. Well, at issue are things like, for example, this is a major intrusion into people's lives, and any rational human being, if they were thinking, I'm going to sue someone, they would look up, they see who the person was, and they do it. And this seems more like this cookie cutter, oh, hey, someone has fit a profile in a database and missing some fact checking.
Yeah, sure.
So who's to say that they wouldn't sue someone who may in fact be doing file sharing, but they just happen to share the same name with someone who has a major hub.
Well, thank you, Miles, on that. I hope we hear if she has to like settle out of court or something. Thank you very much for that. Mr. Tracy, John, welcome. Hi.
Good morning. I'd like to do an update of a story I brought in last week, which was SuitSat.
Oh, was that the spacesuit they threw out with a radio transmitter in it?
Yeah, it's got a name now. Ivan Ivanovich. It's an Orlan-based Russian spacesuit. It's an old spacesuit, and they just toss it out.
Tossed it out of the International Space Station with a transmitter in it.
Right. Ivanovich? Is that
Ivan Ivanovich.
Is that like John Johnson?
It's like John Doe.
John Doe, cool. Okay.
Ivan Ivanovich. And it's out there. It's currently orbiting the Earth. It was launched during a two-hour spacewalk by two of the
I love it. Launched.
Residents.
You mean thrown?
Yeah.
Dropped.
Yeah. Basically pushed. Yeah.
Tossed.
He was pushed.
Casually.
It's currently transmitting on FM 145.990. So if you're a ham operator,
don't turn your radio.
You know,
now.
A ham operator, you can listen in, and it'll give you the suit's telemetry information. It'll give you the time of the mission. It'll give you the internal temperature. It'll also give you some keywords to unscramble, and if you can, it'll also give you a picture to download via radio.
Let's not repeat the frequency because it'd probably be more important to find out where it is. So, what's the website? I'm assuming searching for the Russian equivalent of John Doe is not going to help.
You can just do a Google for SuitSat.
SuitSat.
Or go up to NASA's site. I think we should put a link up on the GeekSpeak site.
All right.
Except there's been a problem with SuitSat, apparently.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. This is news to me. Go ahead.
Reports of nothing heard from sites in Israel, Turkey, South Africa. Two negative reports from Japan.
It could be the death.
There were some positive reports when it was first pushed out. So
it could have heated up already.
And saying that the report signals only heard in SSB mode, TX cycle, and Doppler detectable, but not in modulation.
Yeah, of course.
Which probably goes beyond my head.
I love that.
Okay, we're going. Some of it failed.
Yeah, maybe. We're going to go with one more news story. And
I wanted to ask really quick, John. So it looks like they got a name for this 10th planet. Have you seen that?
Oh, what's the deal?
I saw that they found that it was larger than Pluto.
They're calling it Xena.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen that. And it has a moon called Gabriel.
Okay, that's not going to stick, though, is it?
Xena's psychic. No, the International Society that names planets is going
to... They're going to step in if they decide to make it a planet.
Right. Okay. There's also a planet called Santa with its...
With its reindeer.
Well, yeah, Rudolph, its satellite. And there's a planet called Easter Bunny. So, yeah, all of these are going to be renamed.
Got it.
Probably some boring... numeric nomenclature. As soon as Horizons gets there in 2015, we're going to find that there's probably hundreds of planets like this.
In the Kuiper Belt.
Yeah, in the Kuiper Belt.
When you say planets, do you do the quote mark things?
Planets.
Those were radio quote marks. We're going to go on. Drew, you got a news story?
Let's see. Apple's being sued for potential hearing loss.
What?
Causing damage to ears because of their little earbud headphones.
What?
Yeah, right, okay. I got it.
I didn't get it.
John. So the amazing thing to me in the article is that Apple has sold more than 42 million of iPod devices since they went on sale in 2001. And I think there's about 300 million people in the United States, which is a significant potential percentage. Now, maybe I'm wrong about 300.
Of course, they're international sellers.
Off the top of my head. Still, it's a huge amount of people.
That and, for example, the CEO of my company has something like 5.
How many?
He should pass them around.
She should pass them around.
You know, well, the other thing is that everyone in New York actually owns one. So the entire state. So I think that's the large percentage.
And they've been given to entire campuses, college campuses.
It's true. They've been
pretty good. Well, the point is that the volume settings on the device, combined with the headphones that don't the earbud headphones stick right into your ear, right next to the canal, and they don't have any protection outside of them to dilute the sound entering your ear. So people tend to turn them up, and the device can produce a sound limit up to 100 decibels, which is easily enough to damage your ear. It actually can produce up to 115 decibels.
You know, it really comes down to this whole thing that we're very good at adjusting our internal volume detection. So if you go into a noisy environment, you actually filter out a lot of it, but that's a lot of strain on your ears. If you go in a noisy environment with an iPod thing stuck in your ear, then you turn up the music so you can hear it, and then you just listen the rest of the day like that. So you're kind of maxing out the volume to deal with that first experience of trying to overwhelm the loud volume around you. And that's what really damage your ears. And I'm glad that the suit's happening, not necessarily because I feel that Apple's at fault in some way, but that this will bring knowledge to the point that if you've got someone that's listening to music through a device like this and they're sticking in the ear, you got to make sure you're paying attention to how loud it is and turn it down. Be in a quiet environment and turn up the music and look at the signal level on the iPod or whatever detection thing you have. And remember that that's a good, comfortable level. And if you're turning it above that, you should only do it for short periods of time. Is that good, Drew?
Okay, so they in France, they've pulled them off of the shelves, and they've put a software download that limits the sound level to 100 decibels.
Good.
Now get this. If you listen to it for more than 28 seconds a day at the maximum sound volume, then you're doing significant damage to your ears.
Good.
So
okay.
Enough of the public health announcement there. That was the previous show, but anyway.
Well, just
here we go.
Be careful. All right. Sean, you really want to hit a news story? Can I get on with our topic?
I just
want
to know about the planet name.
So okay, let's
move
go on.
Let's talk about hybrids.
Let's go on to hybrids. Keith Cummings, Toyota Prius master diagnostic technician, works at Toyota of Santa Cruz in Capitola. He's been working there for over 20 years, and he's kind of an expert on cars. And most noticeably, for the geeks, who I think three of the five of us drive Priuses. So, Keith, explain the shop to me that you work in. There's two people like you.
Well, what do you do, Keith? What does
a Toyota diagnostician do?
Well, myself and one other gentleman, Rob Ralston, are called team leaders. We run two separate groups of gentlemen, technicians, that work on the vehicles.
How big are the groups?
Well, approximately 11 techs per side.
Okay.
We're open 7 days a week. And we work 4 day shifts each with 4 days off. Rob Ralston and I, our intended purpose in the shop is to help with the more problem cars and take those cars on ourselves if it gets out of hand.
Okay, so the large group of people you have actually do like ripping out transmissions, putting new transmissions in, rebuilding engines, and they have a lot of skills. They're mechanics, they're very well trained. Mm-hmm. So when do you get involved? When do you get your hands dirty in a vehicle?
If there's a car that's been there, let's say several hours a day that hasn't been able to be repaired, you know, that we're having problems figuring out what's going on with that car, oftentimes Rob or myself will get involved with that vehicle.
Okay.
And spend some time.
In the 20 years of being at Toyota shop in Capitola, how have you seen cars change? I mean, besides the hybrid technology, just like a 2005, 2006 car that's not hybrid, how complicated is it?
Since the introduction of fuel injection and computer control in the mid-80s, it's become, you know, it's gone up exponentially in difficulty to diagnose and repair the vehicles. Toyota really stands behind us. There's lots of training courses we go to with the region, in which we can stay on top of this stuff. And then a lot of it is just us working with the cars day in and day out. You know, you learn processes that you're going to use in repair.
These computers they've got multiple processors in them, and they've got like a network system in the car. How many processors are in like a Toyota Camry, non-hybrid Toyota Camry?
There's three ECUs in that vehicle, one for engine control, one for body area network, windows, etc., and another one that's going to run your lighting systems, radios, etc.
Body area network, what's that?
Body area network basically goes with the Priuses, starting with the first generation Prius in 01, they had seven computers, and because the seven computers built in different parts of the world, they needed to have a translation ECU. So they call the network all these computers going, satellite computers, going and working in this one translation ECU.
And this is all in one car.
Right.
And so then, instead of a LAN, it's called a BAN.
Pardon me?
Is it called a BAN?
It's called a BEAN, Body Area Network.
Body?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure where the A comes in.
okay.
I don't know where the E comes in.
Wait, what did you just say about satellites?
Like satellite computers. I'm sorry, satellite computers. All around, so you have, let's say, we'll go to the new style Prius,
okay,
04 and newer, 15 computers, 14 of them control different devices.
You mean they're little small computers scattered around within the car, not up in the sky.
But they're all connected.
Correct. And they're all connected through this translation ECU.
Mm-hmm. 15.
Mm-hmm. 15 computers.
Wow,
all right,
that's a lot of stuff to go wrong.
That's a good sampling of how complicated a Prius is. Can you tell us, just give us the description of a hybrid vehicle. What is going on inside it that's a little different?
A hybrid vehicle, excellent idea. They've been very, very, very...
Successful.
Successful, mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Sure.
The car in doing a hybrid, you're able to use a transaxle fault with two motors in them.
Of course. What is that?
Yeah, you have an engine and a transaxle that has two electric motors that run on AC.
Now, transaxle, it has the word axle in there, so that's something that runs the wheels.
It's what would be in comparison to a regular transmission.
Which takes the power from the engine and puts it into the wheels.
Puts it into the wheels, okay. Correct.
So transaxle, what's different than a regular axle?
Transaxle would be a front-wheel drive.
Okay.
A transmission would drive the rear wheels. A transaxle would drive the front, and the Prius is front-wheel drive. They use the electric motors, one very large one, to help drive with the engine, the front wheels, to propel the car. That's used for the horsepower and range of that vehicle. The engine itself is used for torque to get the car going, to get it moving, and then the electric motor used for horsepower to keep that car moving.
And you said there was another motor inside the transaxle?
Correct. That's called an MG1 motor. It's used not only to start the vehicle, but to control the transaxle. It's used in the sun gear of the transaxle.
Okay, first off, to start it, so it's kind of like a starter that most cars have.
Correct.
It actually turns the engine over before there's gas running. And then it also deals with the actual transaxle. You said a sun? What is this?
Right. A normal transaxle you have shift points in. You're going to have different planetary gear sets in an automatic transmission.
Which basically means like a manual transition, you're actually doing it manually, switching between first, second. And in a normal automatic, it actually does it for you, but it still has steps.
Right. It's still going to have stepped gears, first, second, third, drive, overdrive. Well, with this, it's only one gear. And they can use the shaft off of the MG1 to spin the transmission in reverse, which you can't do in a normal car. A normal car, you can't reverse the rotation of the input shaft into the transmission. In doing that, all you need is one gear, because you can spin that to 37,000 RPMs, which increases the speed of the transaxle, much less wearing components.
When I see inside these things, like pictures online and stuff, it looks like two cones kind of touching each other.
Right. It's and in between that is that planetary gear set.
Okay.
Yeah, and then it's connected to the MG1 and to the MG2, the large motor for the propelling force.
This sounds like a kind of a mechanical marvel in some ways. When you first saw one of these, were you like, wow, or did it make sense?
When we first saw them, when they first came out, we were kind of scared. I mean, it was scary. You're dealing with a lot of voltage, a lot of potential.
The vehicle itself, right?
Yeah, and you're dealing with extremely heavy components, because these components are very heavy. It's a humongous alternator is what it is.
Oh, right,
and,
right.
Yeah, that they can use. Also, the nice thing about the MG2 and computer control, you can now take the MG1, which is the large motor, MG2, which is a large motor, and use it for the regenerative braking portion
right.
of it. And that drives power from it back into the battery.
Interesting. When Miles and John, they bought their Prius at the exact same time, pretty much. When they bought them, they were looking at it and stuff, and they were talking to me about it. And one of the biggest features was, when you're slowing the vehicle down, if you're not using the brakes poorly, when you slow it down, you actually recoup that energy by charging your battery pack.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes a lot of sense in the sense of trying to conserve energy, which is really what you're trying to do when you're making a fuel-efficient vehicle. And so that's one of the bonuses, if you will. When you brake, you charge your battery. Now, of course, it's not all the braking. So basically the transaxle actually becomes a generator.
Correct. It was very simple for them to do. I mean, once they figured it out, they just reversed the polarity of the motor, of the brushes. You use the MG2 as a driving force for the wheels, but then when you let off the gas, the computer will reverse the polarity, so now it's no longer a motor, it's now a generator. And it's pulling the power out of the coils into the brushes and back to the battery through an inverter converter.
Wow. Yeah. So let's talk about the high voltage. If you've got a motor, so an engine is a gas-driven thing, or oil-driven, whatever, and the motor is an electrical-driven device. So when you said high voltage, how high a voltage are we talking about?
265.
But so it's higher than house voltage.
How many amps, though?
I'm not exactly sure on the amp rating, but it's huge.
Well, a house has, what, 15 amps or something
Yeah,
like that.
Per circuit. This would be well over 125.
Wow,
amps.
So you could arc weld with this shortly.
Oh,
briefly.
Easily.
So is it dangerous? I mean, have you had problems or frightening episodes in the shop, or heard about people getting in a crash and electrocuting stuff?
One safety feature in an automobile accident, once an airbag is deployed in this car, the HV circuit's cut off. It's dead. It's no longer energized. So immediately
HV, high voltage
circuit. Is the high voltage circuit, yeah. So you're safe from that that aspect of it.
So right near the battery pack is some kind of device that actually disconnects the battery from this car?
Correct.
Do you replace those and check those things?
The batteries?
The kill-off circuit that actually disconnects them.
No, but it would set you'd set a code inside the vehicle that would be accessed through a scan tool if there was a problem. The cars are monitored. I mean, they would rather not have the car even run if there's a major malfunction. So
there was a malfunction, as I recall, kind of a problem with the Prius's stalling in the middle of nowhere. Just all of a sudden on the freeway, they just stopped working. We had a couple reports of them. We didn't really hear the story. Did you hear that story?
Yeah, and I've dealt a little bit with it, and that was our good old body area network system, and two computers weren't jiving, and they figured it out, and we've got that taken care of and under control.
So does that mean that every time you get an older Prius in, you make sure that that's reprogrammed?
That was for the newer Prius, actually, 04, 05, and those anyone with that car has been contacted and were brought in for...
I got brought in.
Yeah. But, Sean, you never had the experience of the car stopping on you?
No.
So when a car comes in like that, what is the process for updating the software, reflashing the BIOS or something? Is it like that?
That's what it is. So you will download a program off of a computer, find out which one the car needs, and then we'll actually reflash or put new information, take the old out, put new information into the computers.
Yeah, and then run diagnostics to make sure it stuck?
Correct.
Wow, it sounds just like a problem with a computer. I mean, it's one of the diagnostic problems you do with a computer.
Like a motherboard, you update the firmware.
So, people are also updating Priuses. That you've got stories of people adding giant acid battery packs in their trunk and then running a lot more on DC, on like electrical car, more like traditional electrical car, where they kind of get into that network and they start messing with things and make the car work like an electrical vehicle. They even plug it in at night. And I think there's a couple of professors doing this. There's a group of people doing this. And I've asked all the geeks that have the Prius, you know, are you doing this? You're going to hack the vehicle. What are your take on doing that?
That's a pretty scary thing. First of all, right out of the gate, you're going to void your warranty. That's going to be gone. And for me personally, I would prefer not to drive around with a bunch of lead acid batteries in the back of my car. If you had the funds to put in a nickel hydride battery or a dry battery, dry
cell
battery.
Which is what's in there.
Yeah, which is what is in there, nickel hydride. And you vented it properly, and you put it in a safe place, then you might be able to stretch a little bit of stuff out. But it's not, I don't believe it's worth it to me. You know, the Prius was designed for emission reasons, not for gas mileage. And the gas mileage is kind of a
side effect?
Side effect, yeah.
Now, what about these other hacks? There's all kinds of Prius hacks on the web. There are electrical cords that you can... there's one hack that you can... You plug into there's so many of them, I don't know where to start.
Well, there's
one that forces the car into only electric mode.
Right.
And use the cruise control to start that. So if you're in a parking lot and you just want to force it into electric mode, you can do that. There are hacks on the screen itself where you can turn off the navigation lockout. But once you turn the car off, that goes away, and you have to do the whole key, some sort of a keyboard hack.
What do you think about
there's a bunch of these things, and you can turn off the back when the reverse beep, which is just kind of annoying sometimes. How do you guys feel about all these hacks?
Well, I'll tell you right now, out of all of them, the reverse beep I might look into, because people like to have that. They would rather not have that.
That's funny, because you, of course, deal with cars pulling in and out of garages all day, so you hear that beep a lot.
And a lot of people would prefer not to have that.
So did people ask you?
Yeah, they have, and in the beginning, there was not much we could do with it, but I'm looking into that, so maybe I can help some people out. One reason that is there is because with that style of shifter in that car, if you're familiar with the newer Prius, it would be easy to go in reverse. They want to warn you. You're in reverse.
And right. The new cars have the backup camera.
Right, right.
There's also an issue that when a Prius, if it's warm and it's got a good charge, when you're backing up, it can be completely silent, because the motor doesn't make any noise, really. So when I've had all these geeks pull up at my house and they come to my door, and I wasn't even aware they pulled up because they came quiet into the neighborhood. They didn't want to wake people up, so they just kept their gas, pedal low, and the engine never cut in, and they were able to sneak around. So, to some degree, it seems safer if you're backing up to have some kind of warning for pedestrians.
Right, and the 04, 05 Prius is designed so it will only run off the electric motor in reverse unless you're well into it. If you've got your foot way down into it, it's going to kick on the motor to give you that extra power. Otherwise, it runs only off the electric motor in reverse, so you are silent. Yeah.
All right. We are talking with Keith Cummins from Toyota of Santa Cruz about hybrid technology. GeekSpeak is proudly sponsored by Business Pleasure, a full-service business center in Felton offering color printing, design, computer rentals, delivered office supplies, shipping via FedEx, UPS, DHL, and more. Details at businesswithpleasure.com. Our phone answerers and phone answer and fellow web geek is standing by. Rick Fillman wants to take your calls with questions of technology. Today we're going to focus on vehicle technology, hybrid technology. That's the calls we'd like to take today. So if you got a hybrid, you're interested in buying one, you have some questions about them, please feel free. Their phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or use the internet, go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us.
KUSP co-sponsors the Cabrillo College Theater's presentation of The Lark in the Clear Air, An Irish Wake. As family and friends celebrate the life and passing of Dead Mary, the viewer is swept into a small town as the characters and musicians relive the highs and lows of life. Featuring Grammy Award-winning guitarist William Coulter and a cast of 15, this Celtic work will be presented Saturday, February 11th and Sunday, February 12th at the Cabrillo College Theater in Aptos. Information on the show times and tickets are available at 425-4457.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. You listen to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. That beautiful voice was Drew Meyer. We also have Sean Cleveland, John Tracy, Miles Elam, and of course, our guest today is Keith Cummins from Toyota of Santa Cruz. We're talking about hybrid technology. He's an expert on vehicles, so you're welcome to give us a call. Again, the phone numbers to call in now to ask about computers inside cars, sure, but high technology cars. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877, or use the internet, go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. All right, Keith, we're in some topic that I wanted to make sure we addressed. There's so many things to talk to you about this vehicle, but let's talk about the battery pack that is actually built in, which is a dry battery pack in the Prius. There was some concern when people were first buying the Priuses that the battery pack in the Prius was almost the worth of the car. Like, Toyota was taking a cut on the cost and, like, losing money on every sale, and there's all these things. I'm sure most of that's fictitious. But the battery pack does have a lifespan, and it's a very expensive item. Have you seen any of them start to fail? Have people had to replace them? Thoughts on the dry battery pack?
I've seen no failures with the battery themselves. They're designed to run between 30 and 70% charge, which kind of comes back to people who are plugging these things in
right. And
overcharging them. They want, Toyota has designed it to be a 30 to 70% charged battery for life. I've seen the cars come in with as many as 130,000 miles. Some of the cars out there, batteries are just fine. I've seen cars run the older generation Prius. I've seen people recycle those, rekey those when they run out of fuel to the point where they've taken the battery to nothing. And we've charged them back up with, as a matter of fact, one car twice we've done it to. I won't mention any names. And that particular vehicle's been fine. That battery's
been fine.
Now,
what do you mean
back.
By keyed the battery?
If you, on the Prius, it has a small auxiliary battery, runs just the computers. The computers are what you're awakening when you turn that key on.
Okay.
That's all you're doing. You're not starting the engine. You're not cranking anything over. All you're doing is waking everything up. So if you are to run out of fuel, the car senses that, it shuts down everything, sets some warning lights. As a matter of fact, the dash looks a little like a Christmas tree.
Right.
And at that point in time, you're not sure what's going on. You don't notice that it's out of fuel. And you cycle that key off to back on. It'll start back up the older generation Prius and run on the electric battery pack for a certain amount of time. Then it will do it again, and then it'll do it again, and do it again to the point where you actually drain that battery down where the car won't even move.
What about the new Prius?
The new Prius is designed... The new Prius.
no Prius, I'm sorry.
The new Prius is designed that if it runs out of fuel, that car's pretty much done.
Right.
You're not gonna relight that car.
So you basically, if you're doing that drain to 0% battery pack thing, if they actually design the car to go to 30%, you could theoretically damage the battery in that way.
You could, yeah. You could, and... I haven't seen that happen, but there's a possibility. Also, Toyota Motor Corporation stands behind their products. I mean, just 100%. The battery was, when it first came out, yes, recoup costs for technology and stuff, they did lose. They lost a lot of money in the beginning.
So with that customer who drained his battery twice, a standard jump would get him back?
No, that's not the case, actually. When the HV battery is depleted, the high voltage battery for the car is depleted to that point, we actually have to get a special charger from San Ramon and hook that up. And then sometimes, in this case with this car, I had to stick a small load. I used a bulb across it to get that thing flowing again. Otherwise, it may not have
come
back up. So a little load and let it go overnight, and it came right back up.
Like the pump.
While we're talking about this battery and the generative power of this car, why didn't they put a standard 120-volt house connector?
Or 110,
excuse me, 110. It would just made a lot of sense to use this as a house generator, possibly.
Keith, you're talking
your blender.
You're talking to people that everybody here has like a power inverter, and they plug it into their AC to run stuff, like charging computers.
A lot of the Toyota cars, starting with the Matrix, came out, you have a 110 outlet in the dash that you can jump over to that will actually run a blender. We've run blenders on them. I'm not exactly sure why they didn't do that. It was just about that time where everything was coming into jive along those lines. I don't really know.
Have anybody asked for them?
No, but I mean, inverters are all over the market. I don't see why.
I think the reason is we're all thinking, well, you already have a high voltage source. Of course, it's DC, but it seems to be if you had an inverter that plugged into the DC source to generate AC.
As your first public request for, could you have a 110?
Okay, I can get a little bit deeper into this. The battery is on DC.
Right.
The motors run on AC. It's all changed through what is called an inverter converter. So your charging system in the car, whether it be MG2 or what have you, putting the power back into the battery, that goes in DC. When it comes back out of that battery and goes to be used by the motors to drive the vehicle, now that's AC voltage. Those are AC motors. And they'd have to find a way to limit amperage, et cetera, coming out of that.
Well, what I'm thinking is when the car is in park and you don't need it for the engine, it'd be great if the car could become a generator. And how many watts do you think it could provide? Because it just seems like I lose power to my house. I could plug my
run the station off it.
I could plug my house into my car.
Maybe not the transmitter
until I get my power back on.
Right, but then you're looking.
Of course, I would look for I'd put a switch in my house.
Sean, do you live in some place like Brookdale?
I do.
I'm a Brookdale guy,
and I lose power.
Well, then you're
and
then
I do
you're
have a generator.
About we're coming back around to warranty. You're going to kill that thing, and you know Toyota doesn't want to pay for that.
Yeah. Right. Well, the car would turn on though, right? You have the gas, and it would generate it.
It would.
Yeah.
Yep, it would if it saw a load and it was on a cycle, a key-on cycle. Yeah. It would light itself back up and charge that thing.
Okay, I'm just curious.
In Felton, we have Joan.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello, I'm another San Lorenzo Valley resident that deeply interested in the independent possibilities of both vehicles and houses. My whole career was in solar design, passive solar design, and energy conservation.
Right on.
And I fiddled around with a lot of different devices over my lifetime. I have a solar oven patent and helped on a patent on a pedal-powered potter's wheel.
You got to let us know to come on. We'll have you come on and talk about your patent on solar ovens. Okay, so what's your question for Keith?
Well, my question is, can you convert a four-wheel drive, in particular, I'm interested in converting my Toyota 4Runner into a hybrid vehicle. I know the cost would be great and would require a great deal of expertise, but I'm particularly interested
not wasting the vehicle, getting better gas mileage, getting less emissions, having all the benefits of a hybrid in a Toyota 4Runner. Keith, would that be an expensive process?
That would be a very expensive process. And at this point in time, I don't think there's any way to couple the transaxle with that engine.
I don't mind replacing the engine. Now, I've got this. You know, I really believe in Toyotas, and I work as an outdoor guide, and I'm a strong advocate of alternative energy, and I'm interested at some point in the next 3 or 4 years of taking my vehicle on a world tour. It's already outfitted for going anywhere.
Well, I mean,
but I don't mind replacing the engine. This car already has 280,000 miles on the original engine.
All right.
It was owned once by a nuclear engineer who changed the oil every 2,000 miles and kept meticulous records.
So, okay, so Keith, he basically wants to take a car. The engine's going to die eventually. He wants to put a hybrid system inside a vehicle. What would he do? He'd buy a Prius and then
start over. Yeah, you would be in a position where you'd need to fabricate a lot of components. You'd need to fabricate half shafts for the convert it to front-wheel drive, because that's all that's really basically out right now. If you wanted to remain at four-wheel drive, you'd need to get an electric motor for the rear to operate the rear wheels. The Highlander hybrid is coming out, or has come out. You'd basically need to be able to incorporate those components into this vehicle.
Okay.
What kind of power does the Highlander have compared to the six-cylinder 4Runner?
Let's address it this way. I'm going to go ahead and say goodbye to you and
sure.
Keep on asking Keith some questions. We haven't really talked about the other hybrid technology vehicles out there. Toyota has some. Ford has some. It's actually Toyota technology. Toyota has the Prius. It has the Civic. Honda has the Civic.
Highlander.
And the Highlander. So what?
And the Camry out this summer.
Camry's coming out.
And the Camry's coming out this summer.
I'm a very proud and pleased Toyota pick-em-up truck owner. I have a Tacoma, and I can't get it in either a diesel or a hybrid. And what about all of us truck guys out there that want a bed to carry stuff around in?
This stuff, it's going to be coming. Toyota, over the next year or two, you will see almost every model available, from what I understand, in a hybrid fashion.
Wonderful. So just stick in there. So what about the Highlander? It's a four-wheel vehicle.
A Highlander comes in either two- or four-wheel drive. It's got extensive power. It's 260 horse or so. Tons of power. I mean, I've driven a couple of these, and they're unbelievable. The system has been upgraded to what is now in the new Prius. So it's a stronger, higher end engine and motor assembly. They operate the rear wheels for the four-wheel drive vehicle off another electric motor that is, so you have quite a bit of torque from the rear pushing along with the front, and you're not using the engine to drive the rear wheels as in a typical four-wheel drive vehicle. You're not using any engine power for that. You're using a full separate motor.
Okay.
So you're able to have quite a bit more oomph out of that baby.
All right. It looks like we've got Heidi from Santa Monica. Hi, Heidi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Where are you calling from?
From Santa Monica, but I'm actually traveling through the area in my Prius.
In your Prius, I hope you've pulled off the road to a call. So.
I have.
Okay. What's your question?
My question is, this is my Prius is brand new, and it's my first road trip, and I have some questions about the regeneration screen and what it means. It's not really clearly described in the book.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
So Keith, describe it.
Well, tell us what a regeneration screen is, too.
Yeah, I've got the one with the yellow bars on it. I've got a 2006. And so the yellow bars, and sometimes they're up to 100. I don't know if that means the battery's 100% used in that time frame or...
You're talking about the yellow bars on the battery itself. There's a little picture of the battery itself, correct?
No, not that one.
The consumption screen. The consumption behind screen. That one.
Okay.
Correct.
So those bars are actually regenerated power you have put back into the battery from regenerative braking, etc.
That's all the good you've done today?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So everything you've done good.
If she's got 100%, she's been going downhill a lot.
You're doing good. Yeah, you're producing quite a bit more power into that HV battery pack, and that's where you want to be. That's what you're looking to get.
Those bars being high is good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If there's yellow bars with no little regenerated cars in there, you know how it stacks up the green cars?
Uh-huh. You've got your foot in it, and you've been driving around, and you're not being as good. No, you haven't regenerated as much HV power back, as much power back to the HV battery.
Does that answer your question?
It does, and the only way that you can really kill the battery is if you run out of gas. I heard that.
That's correct.
Is that right?
That car is going to take care of itself. It's going to monitor battery power, etc., the amount of stored battery power it has, and even if it gets to a point where it's feeling it's too discharged, it will turn on a little turtle light on your dash and to warn you that you're going to be driving under limited power for a moment just to get that thing back up to where it's at a comfortable level.
Keith, do you have any tips for her in driving styles to to get as much gas mileage out of the vehicle.
And she's on a long distance road trip on a lot of highway miles.
Best way to get your power out of that vehicle, your gas mileage, etc., out of that vehicle, from a standing stop, you want to get into it pretty hard and get that car up to speed. At that point in time, you'll back off the accelerator pedal a little bit and let it go along at its own, you know, at its own clip. In other words, get it up to speed and then limit your gas, and the motor and engine assembly will keep that thing cruising around and get you your best gas mileage, etc.
Thanks so much for calling.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. Go ahead.
So we have a caller who called in off the air. This person has a 2005 Prius, and they recently read about an outfit in San Diego that replaces the chip so that one can do two things. You can switch to electric only, and you can plug it into a 110-volt socket and charge the car directly. Is there such a thing? Is that aftermarket? Is that illegal?
That would be an aftermarket device.
You wanted to say hack, huh?
Yeah.
It's similar to the hack Sean was talking about.
Before you went that direction, I would contact your dealership where you purchase the car and check into warranty, because there's a good, very good possibility that you're going to be voiding the warranty on your vehicle in doing something like that. And as we talked a little earlier in the show about, this battery is meant to be charged, kept at a 30 to 70% charge. If you're plugging it into a home to charge that battery and you're bringing it beyond that, you're going to seriously limit its life.
From Gonzales, Floyd, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you so much for your program. My question has to do with tires on the Prius. We have an 04 and we've had to change them twice after about 25,000 miles, and I'm assuming it has something to do with the weight of the battery. Is that correct?
Well, the new Prius went away, your year Prius went away from extra load tires and runs a conventional tire pretty much on it now. What I would suspect, what kind of driving did you do? Do you do a lot of hilly driving or freeway?
101.
Gonzales, okay.
To King City, back and forth.
Okay, what I would recommend is keeping your tires properly inflated and have your alignment checked. Because if it's worn out tires in that fast, you may possibly have an alignment problem.
What about getting extra
weight?
Yeah, heavy duty tires.
Extra. Well, you could do that, and you can put any tire on that vehicle, an 04 or above. But I think from what I've seen, the tire wear is normal to any other car with the Prius. Dependent on driving style.
What about driving style? What can she do in a driving style sense to save the tires?
Just keep them well inflated. You might even want to put them up to 36. The outside edge of the tire is wearing is what I would suspect if they're going that quick. And run them up to about 36. You're driving more on the center of the tire and get that alignment checked.
Okay.
And drive a little slower?
Yeah, and drive a little slower.
I'll tell my husband. He's the driver.
Oh, I see.
That explains it.
when the fuel light comes on and starts blinking, how many miles can we go?
You want to be at a gas station before that happens, actually.
Yeah.
Because the way a gas tank in a Prius works, it's like a water balloon inside of a steel frame. It has a regular tank and a post tank, which has the fuel pump in it. When you get down to that area and you get on a steep hill, there's a possibility of not enough fuel getting into that post tank. If that happens, you're out of gas.
So okay. Get gas before it tells you to get gas.
I would say get it before that bar starts blinking.
Hey, you barely have to visit gas stations with Prius anyway. So,
thank you
so much.
You're welcome.
From Capitola, Vince, welcome to Geek Speak.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a question that somewhat keys off what you touched on earlier. I heard a report, an interview with Lester Brown, and he talked about what he thought was an amazing potential for hybrid technology to access, nighttime energy when it was at a less usage.
Off the power grid.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, there seems to be this resistance when I hear you talk, and Toyota, about not using it or not making some... I mean, you could make a fix available that would have some shutoff that would prevent you from overcharging your batteries, I'm sure.
Right. I mean, the same mentality has led to a lot of people hacking their vehicles so that they can charge them up like a traditional car. One of the things is to get duration, you pretty much have to add an extra battery pack because there's not enough stored energy in that battery pack to drive like an electrical car.
I see.
So that's one thing, is you'd have to put in lead-acid batteries or some other battery pack.
So there's another level of fix.
Keith, what is your... I mean, let's say someone actually spends a lot of money and puts in a dry battery pack, so it's safer, and they get the venting in there so that they don't get, you know, intoxicated by that. How do you feel about, I mean, assuming that they're really good with their car and they know what they're doing and they do the hack correctly, if you will.
In other words, if they're an electrical engineer.
Sure. What's your feeling on that?
I think if it works and it's safe, you know, and your car's out of warranty already, it might be worthwhile. I mean, if you can drive around an electric engine, an electric motor, I believe it's strong enough to do that.
Okay. There is the whole stance, I'll just touch on this slightly, Vince, that, of course, if you're charging off of the electrical grid in this area using nuclear energy and coal energy to charge your car, now granted, at night, the energy is not being used as much, but it is using those sources.
Have you considered you might have solar electric at home?
Yeah, if you had solar electric, but then you'd have solar electric at home to charge it, you'd have to have your car at home during the day or another battery pack at home, and every time you have a battery pack, you're going to be losing energy. So it's just
not quite that way, but
power plants can be made very clean running. They've even are working on technology to re-inject CO2, excess CO2 back into the, so you know there's a future. I'm not supporting nuclear energy, but you have natural gas plants, which are less polluting than driving a motor around the road with gasoline.
I would love to address this. I do want to stay on cars, but
I wanted to know why they kind of seemed like Toyota and these companies didn't want to go there. You know, just, I mean, well, I don't want to have a hack necessarily.
Yeah,
I think there's not the mass market appeal for that. I personally would love to put a nickel hydride battery pack and charge my car up and have it be an electric car locally, and then when I go on a long distance trip, use the gas engine.
Exactly.
But I think we're in the minority, and Toyota realizes that adding an extra, what would that cost, another $10,000, $15,000 to a car?
Quite a bit.
Wow.
And I think we should just keep our fingers crossed that hydrogen comes out here pretty soon, what I think.
Because then you've got that portable energy source that is not toxic. Thank you very much for your response.
Oh,
sure.
All right, well, let's go ahead and jump right to another call. From Carmel Valley, John, welcome to Geek Speak.
I have two questions. Maybe we ought to stick to just one, but let's see if we can get them both in. First, a fuel economy question. I've noticed that I try to pace myself between stoplights, and I find I can not only save gas, but wear and tear on my brakes and my transmission, just everything. And the public doesn't like to do this. I mean, you're often almost pushed off the road if you try this, which I do frequently. Are there other ways besides that the public, not just me, but the public could save gas that we generally aren't doing?
Is this with a Prius vehicle or overall?
Well, I have an old Toyota 4Runner, an 87, a four-cylinder.
Okay. As in always, the best way to conserve fuel, proper air pressures in your tires, and proper maintenance of the vehicle. You know, keeping that vehicle in its top running condition, which, as a mechanic for so many years driving around town, I oftentimes see cars that are obviously not well maintained. So that, and of course, keeping your foot out of it will increase gas mileage. I mean, will increase that over, you know, long periods of time. As far as going slow and stuff, it's even though it should be the way everyone should be doing it, it's definitely frowned upon by the people racing over the hill and trying to get ahead.
Speaking of racing over the hill, Highway 17 North Laurel, there's a big jam up. So, Highway 17 going north at Laurel curve, traffic problems right now. I'm going to go ahead and go to the next caller. Thank you so much.
I mean, you know what?
For calling in.
It's tough to drive the new Prius that way because it's so sporty and it's got so much pick up and go that I just want to drive it like a sports car a lot of times, and I catch myself doing that.
I also want to add one thing. You know, plan your trips out. If you've got to go six different places, do it in a logical order. Save all your errands for when you're going out, because once the engine heats up, it's more efficient. So if you're out there doing something, do all the things you need to do while you're out there, and then when you get back, your engine can cool down and, you know, sit overnight. If you're within distance of walking, riding the bike, or taking public transportation, obviously that's a good way to save gas, too.
All right. Drew, you got a question?
We had Jim from Santa Cruz called in and said, what does Keith suggest for adding an iPod interface to the 2005 or older model Prius before Toyota had one? So how do you port your Toyota to the iPod?
Besides the tape.
Wait, what's the iPod plug-in for? I mean, what's the new iPod thing with Toyota Prius? You don't know, Keith? Okay.
John, sound like you have an idea.
Computer guys.
No. You know what? There are kits available. Here's the problem. One of the kits plugs into the CD changer in the back of the unit. And if you're trying to put a Sirius radio in as well, they kind of compete for the same plug. So if you don't care about one or the other, you're okay to go. But you pretty much have to get behind the dashboard and plug this thing in yourself.
And then you basically have a cable you plug your iPod or...
Yeah, actually, there's one out there that is really well done, and it actually uses the volume and the forward track button on the string wheel. It'll actually tie into that.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, it's interesting because this stuff is all about the radio interface, and I'm assuming that these are kind of standards to some degree, and so messing with this is not one of those things that you lose your warranty on.
And good news is, with the new Sienna out this year, they have a plug right in the dash for your iPod, so hopefully that'll be coming up. Yeah, that'll be coming up with all the cars pretty quick, right. I'm sure.
And CoastalTech.com also has, go up to CoastalTech.com, they have an iPod interface that'll actually show up on the LCD screen.
Ooh, nice.
Your different playlists and things. I don't know if this is a sanctioned hack by Toyota, but
send me that link.
Sure.
So Lyle, that call earlier about the consumption screen.
Sure.
There's the little car icon. It tells you how many. One of those cars is equal to 50 kilowatt hours or 50 watt hours.
50 watt hours
of regeneration.
And what that means is you can power a 50 watt light bulb for an hour. And I'll see sometimes five or six of those cars lined up.
Oh, I believe my mother-in-law is the queen of all of those. She can fill up every box on there. Every box on there. She's fantastic.
Especially driving downhill all the time.
So you're regenerating a lot of power then.
Yeah. Unbelievable amounts. And a very good way to do that is on long downhills, let's say, i.e. the Summit back down into Los Gatos or something, have that in B mode, the car.
Now, I heard B doesn't help with gas mileage.
B doesn't help with gas mileage. If you drive
around... It's a braking mode, right?
Correct. You are putting it in B mode. You're going to change that MG2 motor into a generator quicker, faster. And they use that to simulate engine braking, like in a regular automatic transmission, because as we talked about earlier, you don't have any shift points in this. You only have one gear. So you don't have a second gear to put it in a normal automatic transmission. So you're going downhill, you can simulate engine braking.
I use it all the time.
Yeah, lay off your brakes. But if you're driving around in it, in B, you're going to adversely affect your gas mileage.
Geek Speak. Do your brake lights come on in B mode?
No.
Okay.
Geek Speak is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. As sad as I am to say it, we are out of time on Geek Speak today. Keith Cummings works at Toyota of Santa Cruz, and I want to thank you very much for coming on and filling our brains with so much Prius information, hybrid technology information. I would love to have you on as a regular guest every 6 months just to keep us abreast to new car technology.
Certainly when the new Toyotas come out, we'll have you back.
Exactly. Yes. That'd be great. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Next week, we'll be back as we are every week at 10 a.m. on Saturdays. And Drew, next week we have?
Sam Farr, our representative from the Central Coast area, will be on Geek Speak talking about privacy, digital rights, and what's happening in Congress right now. So if you're concerned about the subpoena that was recently issued to Google, what that means to your privacy and all the searches that you've done on Google, call in, write in. Send an email to geeks@geekspeak.org with your questions, and we'll address them next week on the air with Sam live here in the studio.
We would like as much time as possible, so if you're interested in asking Sam Farr any questions, please try to get those questions to us relatively soon so we're prepared and can filter through them and get the ones that seem of the most import up there. So again, geekspeak.org will take questions for Sam Farr all week, and next week we'll be talking with him. We're going to cover mostly technology stuff with Sam, and that's what we want to focus on.
It's going to be focused on the things that we talk a lot about, security and privacy, as relate to your home networks and computers and the information that's out there.
There's the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's going on through Congress, and he's pretty abreast on what's going on. If you'd like to learn more about Sam, you can, of course, go to his website, which is, you'll have to do a search for Sam Farr. But please join us next week to a discussion with him. And then the following week, we're going to be talking about people that do hacks, a lot of them. This morning, the geeks were Sean, Drew, Miles, and John, our guest with Keith Cummins. Thank you for being here, and also, of course, Rick Philman for answering the phones. Thank you for participating every week. To those of you that called in and are listening to Geek Speak, thank you so much for participating on our show and making Geek Speak such a joy that it is to participate in. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. We'll see you next week with Sam Farr. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBDH Santa Arta, on the web at kosp.org. Coming up next is, of course, it is Castle Cottage. For KOSP and Geek Speak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Thank you so much for listening.